Hello and welcome to Bread and Thread, a podcast about food and domestic history. I'm Liz.
And I'm Hazel. We are two friends who studied archaeology together and who love history and making things and sometimes making historical things and also food. So we normally like to start by talking about what we've been making and or baking recently. So how's it going?
It is good. As you may know, because you were there, in the month since we last recorded, I went to Jorvik.
Yes, I remember that because, as you say, I was also there and we were in the same place and it was amazing.
And we went to a tablet weaving class together.
We did!
It was great.
Oh!
We can tablet weave now.
Yes, we can. I even remembered how to do it yesterday. It was great.
And I learned snowbending and I've made an Oslo stitch hat and now I'm working on a York stitch hat because I have a lot of wool left.
Oh, sweet. Second hat.
I don't need a second hat. But I'll throw it at someone, probably.
Did you finish your tablet weaving?
I didn't. I don't have anywhere I can do it, essentially, unless I, like, play the coffee table and then flip it and then sit on the floor to do it. But I went to a Young Archaeologist Club leaders training session yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme was medieval textiles. And nice. There was a tablet weaving demo. And the woman doing it just used a couple of G-clamps.
Ah, that.
I just attached one to each end of a table and then put the tablet weaving on there. So I might get some G-clamps. I don't know.
It's genius. That's G for genius.
Improvise, adapt, overcome. So I might have to get some G-clamps so I can continue my tablet weaving.
I think you should. I think that is the ultimate in mixing the past with the modern.
Yeah. And that's going to be a lot easier to tidy away than if I buy or make an actual tablet weaving loom.
Yeah, true. Probably more portable as well.
Yes. Just bring it out at the pub. Like, you take your knitting to the pub, bring a couple of G-clamps, attach them to the pub table, and just do some tablet weaving around everyone's beer.
Yeah. I genuinely do not see anything amiss about that.
I mean, of course you wouldn't. I feel other people might. But this is why we're friends.
Mm-hmm.
What have I done other than that? We made a strawberry and rhubarb pie.
Tasty.
It's not technically spring yet, but I fancied rhubarb.
Well,
and then needed something to do with what was left of the rhubarb.
As we spoke about in the rhubarb episode, it is the season for the candlelight harvested rhubarb.
It is, the forced rhubarb. Although I will admit this was tinned rhubarb because I didn't want to do the preparing and stewing and everything of it.
That's fair enough. It is. Is it a vegetable or a fruit? I've forgotten.
It's not a fruit because it doesn't have seeds.
Yeah.
I guess it is a vegetable. It's like the opposite of tomatoes. It's a vegetable that's culinarily a fruit. Rhubarb is reverse tomato. You heard it here first.
It's just tomatoes, but the other way around. Amazing.
Tamot? What have you been up to since Jorvik?
I haven't had loads of time. But work on the quilt continues. I made a fantastic Bakewell tart. And those things are great. And I also made Maids of Honour.
Maids of Honour?
Yes. They are like small kind of cheesecakey tartlets that are... the legend is that they were Henry VIII's favourite snack. I don't know how old the actual recipe is, but like the ingredients are all definitely things that would have been used at that time. Like, it's cream cheese with ground almond, nutmeg, and lemon zest.
I mean, they did really like almonds at that time, didn't they?
Yeah. That tracks. So, anyway, they are quite delicious.
They sound delicious.
Yeah. I would make again. And they're quite easy, actually. There's not that many ingredients. And I had some pastry that I made earlier that I froze. So, yeah, honestly, did not take long. And, yeah, apart from that, I've just been trying to rescue my socks that I started, like, 2 years ago.
What do you mean by rescue?
Well, you know that thing where you get, either you get bored or you get to a point where you made a mistake on a project and then you just sort of rage quit and then you pick it up some time later and you're like, where was I?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's ongoing. I am not good at doing the second sock. My brain is like, we've done this already. But hopefully enough time has passed that I will be able to finish it and it will hit that, like, trick the brain into thinking it's a new project because I haven't worked on it for so long. Mm-hmm. And then I will have socks and they will be stripy.
Excellent. Yes. Best kind of sock is a stripy sock.
Yes. So that is it. Would you like to hear about this week's subject?
I would.
So, I will be talking about tiramisu, which you may think sounds like more of a local larder, right? How much can there possibly be to say about tiramisu?
I will admit to thinking that when you told me it was tiramisu, because to me tiramisu is, we go to my in-laws' house and everyone has that and there is something else for me because I don't like coffee.
Yeah.
That's the only context that tiramisu exists in my mind.
I'd scratch everything I'm about to say. Like, there is only one place that tiramisu is served, and it is Liz's in-laws. Yeah, it's a pretty simple dessert in itself. It's just ladyfingers or savoyardi, like the long biscuits with coffee and sugar, mascarpone, eggs, and cocoa powder. Like, that's it, right? You just layer up the coffee dipped biscuits and the cream mixture, and you add cocoa, and you know, you get a very classic Italian dessert.
Yeah, it's like a coffee trifle.
Yeah. And yeah, I like it quite a bit. It definitely has its place though, because it is, like, it's very creamy, and I feel like as a dessert it has to come after a meal that wasn't so heavy, which is the mistake I made a few weeks ago when I served it after a cauliflower cheese main.
It's a lot of dairy.
That was a lot of dairy. So we're not doing that again, but it was tasty. Anyway, so yeah, you might think, classic regional dessert? What? How much could there possibly be? Let me tell you, both the origin and the history of this dessert are hotly debated in Italy. Oh. There is so much drama. You would not believe. This is going to take us to at least three different organizations dedicated to the preservation of tiramisu, and they do not agree with each other.
Spectacular. I'm excited to learn.
It's also going to take us to the Culinary Olympics.
The what?
Which exists. More about that.
I feel like we need a whole episode on that.
I think we do, yes. But I will mention it later so as not to get too confusing about this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the story of tiramisu that is generally accepted is that it dates from the mid 20th century, so it's a relatively new dessert.
That makes sense. I feel like it lives alongside aspic.
Oh, I don't like that image of taste.
It feels very, I have obtained this new luxury good, the refrigerator.
Yeah, like it's very, like, at least I feel like in British cuisine, it was very sophisticated in like the 70s. So, yeah, the generally accepted story is that it originated around the mid 20th century, and the first recipe that's actually written down is from 1959. And that it comes from northern Italy, originating in the regions of Veneto and Friuli Venezia Giulia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that there are two regions that claim this dessert is important. One story is that it was invented at a specific restaurant or bakery, La Betterie, in the town of Treviso, in the Veneto region.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was invented in 1969. However, their first written recipe from 1959 comes from the Friuli Venezia Giulia region next door, from a small town, and supposedly was created by a lady who ran a restaurant there and would serve it a lot to hikers in the region. So there's already some controversy over where it originates from. The name tiramisu means pick me up.
That makes sense for the sugar and the caffeine.
Yeah, like there's a lot of calories in there, and it will, you know, give you a bit of energy. Which it's cute. I like it. Apparently, it comes from the dialect of the region, so it's like
a bit. But which region?
But which region? That is true. So you know how in Italy there is like the designated protected regional food status?
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked earlier about how Parmesan has it. I think there's
the general protected food status, and then Italy has like its own level of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has its own thing. There was the whole thing about I think it was Grana Padano, like the guy in Australia with the cheese YouTube.
Yes.
And he got a cease and desist letter.
Because it wasn't... can't call it that if it's not made in the specific region.
Exactly.
It's just sparkling cheese.
So, in 2017, tiramisu was granted this status as a protected regional product. And it was granted to the region of Friuli Venezia Giulia. Because that's where the first written recipe comes from.
Makes sense if you have to pick one or the other.
It does, yeah. Like, you've got to draw the line somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
However, the residents of the Veneto region were incensed about this. Because the sort of traditional story is that it comes from Treviso.
Are you suggesting that Italians will get mad at food?
Oh boy, am I.
I have never heard of this phenomenon before.
It is incredible. apparently the regional governor of Veneto at the time said, "No one can swindle us out of Tiramisu." And they vowed legal action to fight against this. I believe to this day they still insist that it is a Veneto recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually, where is it? Yeah, so before this in 2013, the same governor of Veneto sought European Union protected status for the dessert.
Yeah, so that's the same kind of level of protection as like champagne and Cornish pasties, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, like it's not the specific Italian version. And the reason they did that was to try and like protect the recipe, so that people couldn't mess around with it and add different things, different flavors.
What?
that is not allowed. However, following the 2017 decision, I believe the Veneto contingent had it notarized that the original tiramisu is from Treviso.
They sniped them.
it doesn't change the designation, but like, is honestly, I'm starting to slightly lose my way because there is so much complicated back and forth about this dessert. And they're literally right next to each other, these regions.
It's easier to hate your neighbour, they're right there.
It's incredible.
Stuff that they're doing to tiramisu.
It just, honestly. Veneto has the annual Tiramisu World Cup.
Okay.
Which has two categories, original recipe and creative recipe. So the
it's
original...
like they let people mess with the recipe. Yeah, after all like that.
They're like keeping it contained. So like we all know what the original recipe is, right? And we know that this is like the recipe how it's supposed to be. So that's the original category. And then the creative recipe, they are allowed to add in other flavours, such as strawberries, lemon, sorts of...
I can't help imagining it, like, when parents let their teenagers drink a little bit at home to, like, demystify it so they don't go out and get drunk somewhere else. It's like, no, you can mess with the tiramisu here under controlled supervision.
And speaking of alcohol, it's important to note that there is no alcohol in the original recipe. Although there's often Marsala wine or like port or some kind of fortified wine in a lot of recipes that you will find. In fact, I've got so many tabs up that it is difficult, but, there we are. So, I'm going to give you the recipe that is available from the Accademia del Tiramisu, which is an organization founded in 2011, based in Veneto, according to them, they are a cultural food and wine association inspired by the principles of historical, cultural, and gastronomic information. And their aim is to disseminate the true geographic origins and the authentic ingredients for the traditional recipe.
Amazing.
So, the traditional original recipe from Treviso, as it notes on the website, includes 300 grams of mascarpone, 3 egg yolks, 90 grams of sugar, the ladyfinger biscuits, coffee, and bitter cocoa powder. And that is it. I will link to this recipe on the Tumblr. It does include another recipe for something called tiramisu scomposto, which is where you have it in a little glass and it's accompanied with a cup of coffee, which sounds pretty cool. And you use the cream from the tiramisu to like sweeten the coffee, and then you have it that way, which sounds kind of cool. Yeah. So there is more from the Academia del Tiramisu. Because their take on the history of tiramisu is that it originated in the 1800s in Treviso, and it was invented by the madam of a brothel.
Okay. Who would
serve it at the end of the evening to her clients as an aphrodisiac dessert to solve any problems they might have, you know, going back and taking up their conjugal duties with their wife.
So this is a dessert that helps you to hide the fact you've been to a brothel by letting you get it up with your wife.
I guess it brings a new meaning to pick me up.
Yeah!
And the reason that the Academia maintains that it doesn't appear in any written recipe before the mid-20th century is that society became prudish and they didn't want anyone to be aware of the scandalous origins of the dessert. But people were still making it, but they just didn't talk about the history.
I'm guessing they don't provide any sources for this, because if there's nothing written down, how do you know this?
No, they don't. The evidence they give is that our grandmas said that they've been making it for years. So clearly...
Oh, that proves it.
It must be old.
Because people never lie about where they get their recipes from. That's just known. That's the proven fact.
Yeah. So... But this is presented as absolute fact on their documentation. So, yeah, there we go. Apparently, food historians do not entirely agree on that one.
I'm shocked.
In fact, if anyone would like to know more about that, there is a couple of historians called Clara and Gigi Padovani who have written a book called Tiramisu: History, Curiosity, and Interpretations of the Most Loved Italian Dessert. Now, I did not know about this, and so I have not managed to read it before doing this episode, sadly, but I would love to, because they are a married couple, and they apparently are known as the dark couple of Italian food writing.
Why?
I'm not sure.
This is a very odd title to have.
They've published a lot of books about food. Just, it is fantastic. So that's one of the organisations. And if you're wondering where the Culinary Olympics comes into it, the members of the Academia del Tiramisu include a doctor, a professor, and a guy who won a gold medal in the pastry category of the 2004 Culinary Olympics. Which takes place. There we go. Which takes place in Stuttgart, Germany. So, or at least it does now. Wait, hold on. I got the right Culinary Olympics.
There's more than one?
Well, it says on the profile of this gentleman, Massimo Albanese, that he won a gold medal in pastry at Erfurt 2004 Olympics. But according to the Culinary Olympics, it took place for the first time in Stuttgart. Oh, wait, no, hold on. The Culinary Olympics has been going for 125 years, and it's just in 2020 that it took place in Stuttgart.
Okay, so it took place in Stuttgart for the first time, not it took yes. place for the first time in Stuttgart.
Yes.
I see.
Okay. I'm unclear on, like, whether it moves around regularly or whether it lives in Stuttgart now. Anyway, yeah, it's fantastic. But I had to send you the promotional video of this event so that you could... It's fantastic. It's extremely serious, but they're all wearing the most massive chef hats I've ever seen. And there's, like, an opening ceremony where they all come in with, like, the country flags, like the Olympics. It's so good. I really want to go.
When we one day get the Bread and Thread TV series.
We will go to the Culinary Olympics. Anyway, so these guys have credentials. This is a very serious organization, entirely dedicated to tiramisu and to claiming it back for the Veneto region. Also based in Treviso is the Confraternita del Tiramisu, or the Brotherhood of Tiramisu. Yeah. And they seem to be, like, the more fundamentalist organization.
Oh.
They do not enjoy the Tiramisu World Cup because it invites people to mess around with the recipe. And they are focused on defending tiramisu. They don't seem to have much of an internet presence, but the person who now owns the original restaurant, La Betterie, appears to be associated with them and has opened a museum.
A tiramisu museum?
Yes.
Tiramisu so museum?
The Tiramuseum. And they are the ones who got it notarized in 2010. There's a notarial deed of the Italian Academy of Cuisine filed on October the 15th, 2010, which reads, "The real tiramisu recipe is the authentic one from the Alla Betteri restaurant in Treviso."
Amazing.
This museum is apparently now open. And I will try and find more information on where it actually is. According to this news article, it is at the Casa de Carrarese. But yes, that is in Treviso, apparently. So we can add that to our list of food, very specific culinary museums. Yes. Anyway, not to be outdone, there is also the Tiramisu Association of Treviso. Now, this is my favourite because they seem to be the bad boys of the tiramisu world.
Oh, tell me more.
According to their description, and this may be something changed in translation, because I'm just relying on Google Translate. But it says, "We are the founders of the group of gluttons with the sin of gluttony erected by ladyfingers soaked in coffee, covered with a soft mascarpone cream and dusted with the best bitter cocoa. We are the ambassadors of vice, that of the most desired and delicious dessert in the world, tiramisu from Treviso. We are
be
committed.
An ambassador of vice.
Yeah, ambassadors of vice. We are committed to bringing the original one where it is not yet known, so that everyone can talk about it in every place. We want it to be the conclusion of every meal, the snack for anyone, the act of absolute pleasure of every meeting.
So for everyone, always. I love it.
The only dessert is tiramisu. It is fantastic. It seems that they organise World Tiramisu Day.
When is World Tiramisu Day?
World Tiramisu Day is the 21st of March.
Oh, it's coming.
It's coming up.
Prepare yourselves.
Decide which side you're on. You haven't got much time. Oh, gosh. I forgot to mention, in the Tiramisu World Cup, in the creative recipe category, you're only allowed to add 3 extra ingredients.
Oh.
That's it. yeah, it's just fantastic. The controversy continues to this day.
Absolutely spectacular.
I might have to stop because there is so much more. There is just so much that is going on. There are some sources that think that it developed from a sort of peasant dish called spatudin, which involves egg yolks and sugar. But yeah, as I say, there's no like solid references to it before the late 1950s. But the myth surrounding it, the magic continues.
Absolutely spectacular.
It's just incredible. So I think I'm gonna have to stop there before it gets out of hand and we start a riot. Shall we move on to local larder for something?
I think we probably should.
Less controversial.
I think the idea should be good, right? But what this podcast supposes is maybe they don't have to be. The Probably Bad Podcast brings you ideas like dire humans fight your GM in real life. And what if there is an eye laser man? Listen to the Probably Bad Podcast, available everywhere podcasts exist and some places where they don't.
I thought, because I keep seeing that Seis Leches en esta economía meme, that I would learn about Tres Leches cake.
Okay. Fantastic. I've heard of this cake, but I have never eaten one, and I do not know how it is made.
Yeah, I think to the British mind, I think Tres Leches cake is just something that they have in South America that we don't really encounter.
Yeah, because there's not that much South American cuisine available.
Yeah, it's mostly like Tex-Mex, taco and burrito places.
Mm-hmm.
But it is neither Tex nor Mex. It is in fact Nicaraguan.
Ooh.
So Tres Leches cake is a very light, very bubbly sponge cake, which is soaked in evaporated milk, condensed milk, and whole milk.
Ah, so 3 milks.
Those are the 3 milks.
Okay. That sounds extremely milky.
So yeah, there is some debate about whether it's Nicaraguan or Mexican, but most of what I've seen seems to agree that it's Nicaraguan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the main places claiming it to be Mexican are Mexican food places.
Yeah. There may be bias.
Because there is a cake called torta de leche, or milk cake, from Tabasco in Mexico, which is cake baked in scalded milk, served with kind of a milk syrup. And the similar things in Oaxaca and Sinaloa. But tres leches seems to very much be its own thing, which comes from the specific way that Nicaragua was colonized.
Mm-hmm.
So Nicaragua was colonized by the British and the Spanish.
Oh, okay.
So you get a lot of interaction between those different cuisines.
I didn't even know we were there. That's a new one.
Oh, we got everywhere. It was terrible.
Colonization. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, but
welcome to Colonialism Corner. We made it. So a lot of what I've read seems to think that it comes from a much older European tradition, and especially British, in the case of Nicaragua, tradition of soaked cakes.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a lot of cake that is maybe a day old, it's a bit past its best. So you could soak it in various alcohols, you could soak it in fruit syrups, cream, that kind of thing. Jamaican rum cake is probably linked to that same tradition. And obviously you have Christmas puddings where you can feed it brandy for weeks before you actually serve it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's another Nicaraguan cake called sopa borracha, borracha meaning drunk, which is a cake that is soaked in honey and moonshine.
Oh, wow.
Which was apparently served in 1566 to the governor of Nicaragua, which kind of popularized the concept in the country. And then you start getting the invention of condensed milk, which is very, very sweet tinned milk, which was being exported to Nicaragua in the late 19th century. If you haven't had condensed milk, it tastes kind of like white chocolate, but slightly less chocolatey white chocolate. It's just like very cheap white chocolate.
Yeah, very thick and like sticky. Mm-hmm. And yeah, white chocolatey.
And you also get evaporated milk starting being distributed in the 1880s. I believe 1885 is when it starts being mass produced, which is basically an unsweetened version. And was used a lot during the Spanish-American War, which is how it starts to then make its way down to South America.
The three milks have quite different origins.
They very much do. Specifically, evaporated milk is thought to have made its way down to Nicaragua in 1909 with US soldiers who were heading down there for doing terrible things. So you end up with, in particularly in upper class Nicaraguan society, quite a lot of things using condensed milk and evaporated milk. So you combine that with the, by that point, well-established their thing of soaking cake in various substances. It just kind of comes about fairly naturally. It shows up in country clubs.
Oh, so it's like fancy cake.
It's very fancy cake. I mean, again, it has three kinds of dairy at a time when fresh milk is very much either you get it right there and then, or your dairy products are butter, cheese, and yogurt, because those are preserved in some way. especially because condensed milk and evaporated milk as well were imported, especially from the US and Canada, so they're more expensive. But it actually becomes more popular during the Great Depression, because there's a 1936 trade deal signed, which basically makes it a lot cheaper to import dairy products to Nicaragua from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the state with the cows, as far as I can tell. Like, cheese from Wisconsin is very much a thing.
Like, being known as the cheese state is kind of cool.
Yeah, there's definitely states with worse reputations. Hello, Florida. So between that and the fact that soaking cake can help to stretch it, it just overlaps in this sort of perfect storm to make tres leches cake. Which then makes its way to the US in the 80s because of increased immigration from Latin America to the USA.
See, now that is a cake with a tidy origin story.
It's the opposite of tiramisu, truly.
It makes sense.
Although I will say, some people do add a fourth. It's often topped with whipped cream.
Oh. That
fourth
is
smell.
Cuatro leches?
Cuatro leches.
That is truly indulgent. I would like to try the tres leches.
And then, like I said at the start, there is the seis leches cake, which I believe was in the New York Times. The one that was being memed on. Which, unfortunately, I have been unable to establish what the other milks are, because there is a paywall. Okay, I found one thing saying that one of the milks is coconut milk.
Is... Are we calling that a milk?
I mean, like, it's sold as a milk.
Yes. That could be controversial. I mean, I suppose... Is it that cow's milk is just a kind of milk, including plant-based milks?
Okay, it has unsweetened coconut milk, sweetened coconut milk, and cream are the other three milks.
Okay.
I guess if evaporated and condensed milk count, you should be able to count sweetened and unsweetened coconut
milk.
Yeah,
it's just milk different ways.
Yeah.
If you combine the unsweetened and sweetened coconut milk, though, will that not just make slightly sweetened coconut milk?
But if you combine evaporated and condensed milk, does that not just make slightly sweet, thick milk?
Oh, it's like, too late for this.
Like, where do you draw the line? Before we get into how many
comments
are there. Yeah, but before we get into is coconut milk milk, there's a slight chance that I'm going to end up doing a what's the best milk bracket on the Tumblr now, like I did for breads. But yeah, before we get into that, this is episode 99.
Oh, and so it is.
For episode 100, we're going to do something a little bit different. So, we want your questions. We've had some, but questions that wouldn't necessarily be answered in a normal episode. Questions that aren't necessarily related to what we talk about. Just, yeah, a little bit of a mailbag episode.
Yeah, if you're interested in anything to do with craft, or like you're like, hey, where does this thing come from, and you want us to hilariously try and find it out in,
or like bits of history that wouldn't normally come under our purview.
Yeah. Doesn't even have to be food now.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you can email breadandthreadpodcast@gmail.com or message us at breadandthread on Tumblr. Which you can also do if you want to suggest an episode or a local larder. I am going to be trying to do one on the Culinary Olympics soon if I can find enough information, because I'm fascinated.
I think that would be great. I would like to know more about the Culinary Olympics. I didn't have time to go into it too much because there was a lot to say about tiramisu. But I was very pleased to discover that it exists and apparently has done for a long time.
But yeah, if you want to support us, pay for us to go to Jorvik next year, maybe. You can go to patreon.com/breadandthread and get access to a Discord server and recipes. None of which originate from Venezia so far. We will see.
Or do they? you can also find us at Bread and Thread on Tumblr, where we post pictures and links to things we talk about on the podcast, teasers for upcoming episodes, and we reblog things related to our podcast.
So thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.